Hey guys, welcome to our Scared BnB after show with the Garage Girls.
Two girls in a garage
creating stuff. I'm Courtney Dunham.
I'm Beth Selman.
And we're so glad that you're here to talk about our newest episode, which is called Save the Cat. As a reminder, if you're new to Scare BnB, make sure that you listen to Save the Cat before you tune in here. Because heads up, there'll always be a lot of spoilers. We like to talk about our favorite moments, the plot twist and all that. So obviously it's very helpful if you actually get into it first, so we don't ruin the surprise for you.
But first, before we get into it, we like to talk about what we're having for lunch.
Because this is a part food show. And we're breaking our cardinal rule. We have two rules before we do our podcast. We did have our yummy coffee, and we always drink a lot of coffee and water. And so we're like, okay, we've got to make sure that we go to the bathroom first, because that's always jumps on us.
And don't podcast on an empty stomach. Yes. Unfortunately, they didn't have anything good down the street today at the food trucks. So. Yeah. We're going to podcast without eating, so
and
hang
Beth
in there with us.
And Beth came in a little upset because she went down there to try to get some rice because I've been fighting a headache. And
they wouldn't sell me any. Probably thought I was homeless. Yeah. I was going to pay for it. Yeah,
they wouldn't sell her just rice, but God love you, as Mama would say, for thinking of me to get some rice.
We'll bring the crackers next time, yeah.
So we haven't ate, but we're going to tell you really quick what we're going to eat. We're probably going to head to the California Fish Girl, which we love, our fish tacos. It only took us 2.5 years to find our
Can we just talk about that for a little while?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's lightly breaded, and it has so many yummy sauces. I think there's like about 6 sauces. So the trick is really about, look at your face. You're like, I'm right there.
I'm like,
the delicate balance with the ranch and the tomatillo and the salsa.
Yeah.
Can we just pause and we'll just come back to this later? We gotta go. Yeah.
You know how California is known for their fish tacos, supposedly, but literally we tried like 3 or 4 places, and you know how like if you're a big fish eater like I am, you love the fish. You don't want it too heavy. You don't want it greasy.
It's really fresh.
You want a little.
And it's only $8 for the whole meal, which includes rice and beans and the drink. Now we're getting into way too many details.
Yes.
Okay, let's get back to Airbnb.
But we do love it. I have to say, though, first, though, we always say that we talk about our sauces. I was laughing when you were talking about it, because when we sit down, literally just the two of us, and we've been splitting the plate lately, and literally if you walked by, there's literally like 12 sauces lined up.
Okay, we have a whole routine because one person's like, okay, you're going to go?
Yeah.
And then it's like they take 2 trips because you can't carry all the sauces in one trip.
Yeah, it's like essentially with little hands, so it's like, okay, I can't
do
this.
Go back again.
Okay,
see you in a minute.
So we will tell you later how it was, but we gotta just start with that, like, so we're gonna carry the idea of our fish tacos through us through the rest of the episode.
Yes.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
So as usual, we're in our favorite Culver City loft office again. We've got Belle here,
she's asleep next to me,
Gigi dog, who's also probably dreaming about a fish taco.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so let's talk about Save the Cat. What inspired this story? This episode is written and narrated by the wonderful King Salmon herself, Beth Salmon. That's a whole story in its own.
Yes. Well, I think that I can speak for both of us in saying that this story is kind of near and dear to
definitely.
Who we are, because the main character is a screenwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a little bit of fun with this, because in all of our kind of what if brainstorming, and if you guys know us, the Garage Girls, we did write a screenplay that won. It was like a top 10 finalist in one of the biggest screenplay contests, and we were pretty jazzed about it.
The top few percent out of like
20 some thousand. It's called Our Past Life in Provence, and we actually got a notice from them, and what they wrote is exactly how I used it in here. So the setup is, you know, if you listen to it, the screenwriter wins this contest, and she is given a free weekend stay. Of course, she has to pay for her own airfare and everything else, her rental car. But she's like, I won something.
Yeah.
She was so excited to win something, which we know it was a complete and total ruse set up by a crazy psychopath.
So yes, in this case, obviously, he was up to no good. But I think the moral of the story, which we can really identify with, is that she was seeking validation. And I know as a writer, as two writers, or any profession that somebody chooses that a lot of people think is just a dream and it's not going to happen, I think validation is so important. Whether, you know, we're so lucky that we get that from each other, but 9 times out of 10, people are going to be criticizing or not getting it.
Yeah.
And so for her to get this notice, I don't think that in her defense, she's thinking about, well, this is improbable because she's won. Someone has said, I love your stuff. You're doing the right thing. Stay on the path.
Yes. In the beginning of the story, and that's a big part of her transformation, she is a writer who is looking for validation.
Yeah.
And that is perhaps how she doesn't see some warning signs or the red flags, and she kind of gets sucked in, and then when she finds out, it's too late.
Yeah, and she makes a point about bringing up her mom is, you know, and moms love us, but, you know, they do question a lot of things that we do, and I thought that was so funny when she came into the Airbnb, because she's, or the B&B.
Yeah, framing the picture in her camera.
Yeah. She was like,
so
look around.
Really,
yeah.
You can see the pool behind me. It's a really nice place. Look what I won, Mom.
Yeah, because in the long run, she wants to make her mom proud, too. I don't really think it's an ego thing. I think it's just validation. It's like, see, I'm like doing it here. I am making things happen, you know?
Exactly.
So, well, as far as the title, Save the Cat, as we know, as the story continues, that's going to have like a double meaning. But let's talk about where you got that title from. And
Save the Cat. Okay, so in screenwriter parlance, there is a book by Blake Snyder called Save the Cat that Courtney and I have both read. And it basically outlines these beats that every good story, mm-hmm. every good story has to hit. So, of course, she's a screenwriter. There was like the double entendre of Save the Cat and applying to this beat
mm-hmm.
sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as the narrator, as the story is being told, she refers back to all of these steps of the hero's journey
yeah.
in kind of screenplay lingo, because she is
right.
one. And also there's the double meaning because her name is Catherine, so her nickname is Cat. So
Cat.
Save the Cat. She is also saving herself. And in this story, there is actually a cat that is a major
part. So it's basically
part.
Got quadruple meaning in
yes.
the story.
And can I just say that Blake Snyder, why he named that book Save the Cat, I just think is so interesting, is because he's referencing one of my favorite films, which is Aliens, when the character of Ripley actually goes to get the cat. Remember, they were all going to
yeah,
leave
uh-huh.
the ship, and they were going to blow it up.
Yeah.
And the thing that stops her is her humanity. And Blake Snyder used that as a point to be like, you need to have these moments in your stories where she actually goes and risks her life to go and put the cat that's out on the spaceship into a little carrier.
To me, that was one of the most memorable parts because being animal lovers, it's like, well, you can't leave the cat behind, can't leave the dog behind, or whatever the animal would be.
Yes.
I might leave a fish, but I wouldn't leave a dog or a cat.
We usually have dogs in our stories, but this is a little homage to the cat.
And speaking of, you just mentioned Ripley. Beth loved that movie so much that she actually named one of her dogs Ripley.
Yes, I'm sure that name will be coming up again.
Exactly. Yeah, and probably with another character that we write. But I want to go back, though, when Beth and I first reconnected, as we always say, instead of met a past life reference. But when we reconnected, she would always quote this book. And I was always so interested in what she would say. But I finally said, what the hell is Save the Cat? Like, and so that's why I love it that you chose
it's
this
a really good
for
book.
That title, because it's a great book and I loved it. But how, like, can you imagine? Well, as Blake Snyder says in Save the Cat, so that made me want to read it because I was like, okay, Save the Cat with a title like that, we have to read it. So
yes, it's very helpful because it breaks down all the little twists and turns that you put in every story.
So. Exactly, yeah. And so, as we always do when we go through the episode, we always talk about some of our favorite parts of the story. And I think for me, I remember when I first read it, and I'm sure you guys have the same reaction, it's very funny, which is unusual in some of our Scare B&Bs, but I loved it so much because of all the movie references. And there was, I mean, so often when Beth and I are brainstorming our stories, we always bring up movie moments that are kind of similar, yes, or that might have inspired us.
This was probably one of the most fun aspects of writing this, because as writers, screenwriters, we all have our favorite movies, but and I got to like just cull through, curate my favorite list.
Yeah.
But the like the one that I love was anybody that's grew up in the 80s, okay, will remember 9 to 5 with Jane Fonda.
We were
Lily
only two
Tomlin,
though
Dolly
in the 80s,
Parton.
Right? Were we like just born in the 80s or what? Yeah.
I feel like my sister and I watched that like Summer Vacation, Home All Day. We watched that many times. But remember the Dabney Coleman character, they basically get him in his house. They've kept him hostage, mm-hmm. and he's put into some crazy S&M garb, which back then were like, S&M, what's that? Yeah.
Well, and also they were way ahead of their time with this whole sexual harassment stuff, because no one really talked about
God,
it then.
Yes.
And it was like, he was so terrible, but he was a great villain,
was
though,
a great
wasn't
story.
He?
They got their revenge, but I was like, wouldn't it be funny if this guy remembered that movie and basically he ties her up the same way Dabney Coleman was tied up in 9 to 5.
Which was so funny, because like, remember when they would open the garage door, he would get like
press the garage door opener would like fly up to the ceiling.
That was so funny, yeah. Especially for like only being 2 years old, we so got all the references, right, when we were in the 80s. So, and then of course, there's other movie references and posters. And my favorite, it's always hard when people ask you what your favorite film is, because I have probably five that are probably circulating to the number one spot. But one of my all-time favorite films, and I know you feel the same way, is Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
And everybody knows, spoiler alert for the one person out of a million that may not have seen this, but when he makes his escape at the end of the film, and then it goes back to show that he's been picking away at this rock wall for basically 18 years to be able to go
and
through.
Been hiding it because the poster is tacked up right in front of that big hole, which becomes bigger and bigger and eventually big enough that he can climb right out of it.
Yeah, and it's such a lesson in perseverance and never giving up and just keep on trucking away. And I feel like, once again, there's so many hidden meanings there with being a writer, especially in this business, you know. And but can we just take a moment about, like, if I could just, we should just all watch that on YouTube when he's literally crawling through shit to get to the other side, because I feel like we can all identify with those moments. And I remember the first time that I saw it, I think I was in college. But I remember, which seems shocking now, but I remember feeling at the time when I was watching it that it felt a little long, and then you got to that part and it was like, oh my God. And then you're like, and then I wanted to go back and rewatch everything. Now when I watch it, it doesn't feel long at all, but the ending was so spectacular that it just like carried the whole film.
It kind of makes me circle back to another writer we like, Liz Gilbert, and the whole thing about the shit sandwich.
So. Yeah.
Which I think is totally relevant to this, because it's really about, you know, going after your dream and being creative, which I think Liz has done such a great job of talking about.
Yeah.
But what's the shit sandwich? What is the thing that you would do? Would you eat a shit sandwich to do that thing? And in this story, it's, you know, the screenwriter who wants to write. And I think this whole story is really about her understanding why, even if she's not made it, like the frustration of rejection after rejection after rejection, never making it, and but still she still does it, and it's she discovers that's who she is, and that's her self-discovery in the story, which is one of my favorite parts too.
I'm still on the shit sandwich. I feel like we could, that's a mouthful. The shit sandwich.
With Shawshank Redemption to shit sandwich.
Yeah. Because it's like, I mean, we've eaten a lot of shit sandwiches.
I think it's so true though. It's the
thing. What
would
you do because you loved it anyways? And you're willing to, especially
for
us who love our food.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did not like the shit, but we will do whatever we have to.
Yeah, because it's about
to keep our dream alive.
I think it's about telling the stories.
Yeah, and it's all about the love of the story, which kind of brings us towards the ending with the whole point of they're like parallel characters, because he's tried to make it And he's tried to go through all this stuff, which has basically pushed him to this point of losing his mind, right? And becoming a psychopath, like you referenced at the beginning of the podcast. But like with our main character, she basically ends up saying, well, I would do it. She realizes in her transformation that, yes, she had this validation, but she's like, wait a minute. I'm realizing now that I would write just to write because I want to get our stories out there.
Yeah.
Like, I love it that much.
He forces her to that understanding because basically he's holed her up for the weekend in his apartment.
Yeah.
And chained her up basically and tells her, he leaves her and says, you've got to write this, write my movie, because he's a director who never made it. And he's saying, you've got to write my movie. And when he comes back, and she's supposed to have written this great movie, which we reference another movie we love, which is The Sixth Sense. You'll hear us talking about The Sixth Sense again and again and again.
Especially
it had
with
such
suspense.
A great ending.
Yeah.
And he puts the big pressure on her and is like, you know, is it going to be, is it really going to be better than The Sixth Sense ending? Like, no pressure there. And when he comes back, they have this moment in the dialogue where he says, let's get to the good part. And the good part is, when does the character, like, confront that she is never going to make it? When does she just give up? And in screenwriting parlance, that is the dark night of the soul. It's like,
yeah, which goes back to Save the Cat.
Which is the pivotal transformative chemistry. It's the alchemy. It's the thing that you need to push your character. And when she looks at that and she was like, oh my God, we are so similar. He's a killer. Okay. And I'm a failed writer. And, you know, why is that? And Bella's scratching herself right now.
That clicking noise that you hear is a sound effect. It's called Belle scratching her harness.
But yes, to get back to it. So
yeah,
she realizes that they are very similar. And she says, you know, it doesn't matter if I never find validation in Hollywood. And it doesn't matter if I ever make a dime. This is who I am. I'm a creative and I'm a storyteller and I will write until I die. I will write until I die in this room. But she says, it's not going to be easy to kill me. I'm going to go down swinging. And I feel like she really delves into her creativity. And that's why I love the story, because from a writer standpoint, it's like, oh, she's got her superpowers, her creativity. Yeah. So how is she going to use it to basically write her way out of this? Which is like a really funny ending on how she does it.
Exactly. Exactly. Which pulls us back to the cat itself. And I love how you referenced Ripley before, because once again, you're pulling yet another favorite ending with aliens and going back. So what made you like going back to the cat? Because of course, when she puts the note on the cat to get out, we're all like hoping, okay, someone's going to find the cat. This is what they mean about save the cat.
Yeah.
This is what, but then he comes in,
and
shocker.
He's got the cat. And he's got the note. He pulls the note out of his pocket and he's like, well, you mean this note? Is that how you thought you were going to get out of here? Is this your big Sixth Sense ending? Because it sucks. Because it didn't work. And then she reveals, sorry, that was the false ending. And that's not really what happened. And he's like, what happened? And then she lunges at him and gets the cat, saves the cat. And then at the end of that chapter, you think she's going to die. But the police break down the door. And then we learn in the epilogue that she had changed the Wi-Fi password to be something that revealed that she was being held hostage. And that writer guy that we set up at the beginning, he's the one who was trying to get on the Wi-Fi at his friend's apartment in the same complex.
Which we've all been there.
He saw it and called the police and sent them over. And I that was one of those things where we talk about Scarabin B lets us do every weird idea we've ever had. But if anybody's ever gone onto the Wi-Fi, like wherever they are,
there's crazy ass names on there.
There are so many weird names that I was like, what if one of them said, you know, help me.
Yeah.
So I just filed that away in the back of my head, and I thought it really worked for the
story.
Which
it was a great thing, because he had thought of like a lot of things, like she couldn't email, she couldn't do all these things, but no one would actually think, do I need to, are they going to go in and change the name of the Wi-Fi?
Yeah, and he was using the Netflix queue to torment her, because
exactly.
He was putting all these scary movies in there to be like, check out to see what, you know, Hannibal, that's what he called himself, also to psychologically, like, freak her out. He called himself Hannibal, reference to Silence of the Lambs. and he had set up the cue to kind of scare her, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
But using the cue, that's how she got, you know, was able to get into the internet. And
yeah, you did a great job of mirroring them, because they both love movies, and he had gone to a darker side. But in the end, really, it was her love of movies that helped save her and helped save the cat, because she was like channeling.
It's true. And we had a fun talk about this before, because in all movies, you know, you have your main character, your hero, but then all the other characters are basically aspects of her psyche.
Yeah.
So the guy, mm-hmm, in this case, the director who never made it, who is a psychopath,
yeah,
who keeps her hostage, he's actually representing that side of herself that's like admitted defeat. That he's, that's like what happens if, it's the dark side if you don't make your dream.
Exactly.
And in the story, she has to confront that.
Yeah.
She has to identify and integrate that, and then she has to overcome it.
Yeah.
And that's like Save the Cat, you know, Blake Snyder, you know, the beats. That's
101. Like, and I feel like with us, with all of our stories, there's always a little bit of a transformation that happens with us as writers too. And which brings us kind of full circle to that need, that there's always a part of our ego that wants that validation. But to circle back to one of our other favorite writers, Brené Brown, who we just absolutely love, Beth and I are so fortunate to have each other's support. But often, no matter what good news we have, like we could tell somebody, oh, we've launched Scarebnb, we finished all these things. Beth and I are like always proud that no matter what, we do everything that we say we're going to do. And because we love the story so much.
It's, you know, it's not easy living a creative life.
People don't get it. And it's like, it's still like this, you know, far off, la-la, dreamland kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
We wanted to read the quote, so I pulled it up right now from Brené Brown. And it says, "It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly."
Woohoo! Amen, sister.
And that was actually Theodore Roosevelt, the man in the arena. I forgot she referenced
Roosevelt. That's right. That's even better. Well, we still love her.
That's, you know, that's like our daily mantra. It's like, get in the arena, girl, because doing this stuff is scary. Putting yourself there, putting your stories up on a podcast. I mean, it's
and everything, and just like reading that, I mean, just everything that we do. And I just wanted to circle back to what I was starting to say, because it's like, no matter what we do, we have people in our life, some close to us, some not so close. And it was like, they'll often say, well, when are you going to sell that? When are you going to do that? And it was like, okay, I'm sorry. What are you doing?
Did you get your agent?
Yeah. It's always, do you have your agent? And it was like, we've realized the harder that we work, how many more steps there always is to do. Like, we're currently hunting for an agent right now. We were able to get this free week trial to the subscription service. And it was like, we spent all this time just digging and digging for information on who would accept an unsolicited manuscript or script. And it was like, and then there's the promotion. And it was like, Beth and I wear every single hat. And so we're always busy, plus juggling our other, as Liz Gilbert says, our fake jobs.
Yeah.
This is our real job.
The rest of our lives.
But our ones that have to pay the mortgage and the rent.
And I think we have one really big advantage in that, is that we're like a great team and we're partners. And I think that helps to kind of keep the other one on the creative path, because it's really easy to be like, oh, you know what, maybe I don't have that book in me, or I thought I would write that in my lifetime. And, you know, there's so many things that can come in front of that.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to, like, I don't have time, or I'm not good enough, or whatever the self-talk
you know, life.
Have.
Yeah, and then it doesn't help when you have people in your lives that are questioning that, or, well, why haven't you done that? And it was like, I just want to go back to that last line, because it's like, until you're in the arena, like, don't criticize everyone else. Because most people just talk about stuff, and we get on our own self. And it isn't until we go to do something like where we come full circle that we're like, man, we have done a lot. Like, because we beat ourselves up all the time. So here's to being in the arena, guys. No matter what stage of life you're in, we're in our second act. And we're the Garage Girls, and we want all of you to just go after that dream and make things happen.
Yeah, get in the garage and do whatever you think that you couldn't do. And don't wait around for anybody to produce it. That's what we're doing.
We know what makes us feel good, so here's to a year of doing that and beyond. Just going after things that make us feel good, getting in the arena, not listening to anybody else's shit.
That's right. Okay? We really like, we've given ourselves a nice pep talk.
And we needed it. It's a Monday. Yeah, we needed it.
Thanks for tuning in to the after show. We were just talking about Save the Cat, the latest episode. And we've got another great episode coming up, probably in another couple of weeks. And that is called
On the Edge at Neocony. It's Neocony on the Edge.
And where is Neocony?
It's on the Oregon coast, which is like one of my favorite places on the planet. So just think kind of Hitchcock thriller on a stormy night, the Oregon coast. And that's all we're going to say, but it will be up in a couple weeks. And so get ready.
Yeah, that's going to be a really good one. And we've taken you all over the place, but as we always say at the end of our segments, if you have a place that is inspiring you, or you've been to, maybe you've been to a B&B, or maybe you have a B&B, or you know of a location that would be really good for ScareBnB, or any story, leave us a message.
Yeah, let us know. We always want to write about places that make us all, our hearts tick and our minds race, right?
So, that's right. So we're the Garage Girls.
Two girls in a garage creating stuff.
And we'll see you
in the garage.